Welcome to the Armour Men's Health Show with Dr. Mystery and Donna Lee.
Hello and welcome to the Armour Men's Health Show. I'm Dr. Mystery, your host, board-certified urologist, men's health expert, and founder of NAU Urology Specialists, but I couldn't do it alone.
That's right. You have a whole team.
I have a whole team. And no team member important, more important than you, Donna Lee, my co-host.
That's right. Welcome to the show, everybody. Thanks for joining us.
We have been delivering this show for many years.
Yeah,
You can take this show in via podcast.
It's felt like 10
on the radio.
Minutes, though. Underwater. That's right.
It's like being married to you. So we talk about all things from the nipples to the knees on this show. Mm-hmm. This show is brought to you by the urology group that I started in 2007. Donna, how do people become our patients? How do they learn more about us and send questions to us?
You can reach out to us at 512-238-0762. Our website for this amazing show that's free for you listeners is armormenshealth.com. And don't forget to check out our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. We're in Round Rock, North Austin, South Austin, and Dripping Springs, Texas, where Dr. Mystery, they still claim to love dripping.
They love dripping.
We're trying to fix
the
dripping.
We're trying to fix all the dripping, and they're trying to make
but
more
that's
dripping.
Okay. It gives us more business out there. We are out there, you know.
And we are joined once again, very fortunately, by a great friend of mine, Dr. Cedric DuPont. Dr. DuPont,
welcome
Cedric,
back.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So for those of you that are listeners here or imbibe us on the podcast, Cedric, you are a board-certified anesthesiologist.
That's correct.
You put people to sleep like for a living.
Correct.
But that is not your only passion. Your other passion is in expanding the information use and comfort level of the use of medical cannabis. Is that right?
That's correct.
Now, would you tell me, why does just the notion of cannabis make everybody around us so silly?
And giggle?
I mean, everybody's giggling.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the side effects for the recreational use of it.
That's just talking about cannabis.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what I want to talk about is how do we, you know, as a medical profession, take it more seriously? And I'll be the first to admit, I have had a hard time with medical cannabis because I don't use it. It wasn't part of my subculture. You know, I didn't go to University of Texas.
Correct.
And so it's just something that I never grew up with. My friends never did it. Like, it's so alien to me. And then it's been so, like, vilified. But we live in a society in which, you know, rampant alcohol use is normal. It's cheaper to get opioids from the pharmacy than it is to get Tylenol. I mean, it's a society in which we've decided somewhere along the way that as a medical profession, we're going to normalize certain things that are bad for us and vilify other things that we think that are bad for us. And but because I think of myself as a smart person, I want to, like, understand the science behind this, you know, pharmaceutical agent and where does it play a role kind of in our society. But we have to understand as physicians that people get a little silly when it comes to medical cannabis.
That's correct. So you're a very intelligent man because you have me on your show, first and foremost. And yes, so if you had to go back, you can look at the politicalization of cannabis. It was used for many centuries by many different cultures. You have Native Indian cultures. You have African cultures were using it. And then somewhere in the 1920s, when there started to be immigration from the West Indies, in order to sort of segregate those individuals who were practicing basically non-Christian faiths, they started to tax cannabis. And then taxation of cannabis then went to total abolishment of cannabis during the Nixon administration. And that was during the time of, you know, a lot of Woodstock, Free Love. And so it was sort of considered by society as an either evil or a gateway drug or the devil's weed. And you have to sort of look back now at where we are, where we sort of question everything. We're a society that—
Yeah, woke.
That, yeah, a woke society. And so we sort of look back at the principles and we're like, okay, well, it doesn't make sense that this was used medically, and how was it bastardized by Western civilization? And then they started doing research on it. And you, it, the research, like you said, the reason why a lot of doctors aren't comfortable or familiar with it is because there's literally no research. As a Schedule I drug, you cannot...
You cannot do research on it. And there's a lot of banking regulations. I mean, there's a lot of barriers to it. And so when it comes to the use of medical cannabis as a medical professional, oftentimes we feel like, well, not rightly or wrongly, that the medical cannabis use was really just a cover to allow people to like
use it recreationally. Yes.
And so, we hear a lot more stories of people like faking, you know, chronic fatigue syndrome or something like that, just so they can get their card, you know, when California, for example, was the only place you could do it. And so I think that a lot of us in the medical profession have this impression of what medical, even just medical cannabis use is, and that it's really just fakery.
Correct. And that's a normal reaction to have with almost anything when you have to do a paradigm shift on everything you were taught. Like when you have your building blocks, and I'm sure, you know, the equivalent to this would be sort of be, you know, you're one of the first urologists to address, as a board certified urologist, also address sexual dysfunction. Like, you were one of the first people in town to do that. I remember when I met you, when you first opened
up. Female sexual dysfunction.
And it was something that was not, male was always there. Yeah. There was always the male impotence drugs. There was always those. Right. And you addressed that. You had I remember like when I went to your open house, I'm trying to think what year this was, like 2000.
It was a long time ago.
1982.
Yeah, shut up.
A long time ago. I remember it was a big top, like you had a.
Yeah. So female sexual dysfunction when I came to town was different. People didn't understand why I was doing it.
They didn't talk about it.
It seemed very awkward. And I think that's a very good point. So when you're trying to do something new, there's going to be a general sense of some resistance.
And who was your biggest resistance? It was not coming from your consumer base. It wasn't coming from your patients. It was coming from the other physicians who either felt threatened because they didn't know about it and they didn't study it. They were just used to doing cystoscopy stents. They didn't want to delve into
the female sexual dysfunction,
which sometimes takes more one-on-one time with the patients, because you're not just looking at an X-ray and being like, oh, I see where the stone is. I'll schedule you for surgery.
So if we're going to use the same correlate, why don't we just not call it cannabis today?
Well, okay? that's sort of what we've changed.
Let's just talk about what is the chemical compound we're talking about, and biologically, what does it do in the body?
It's very interesting, because it's not just the one drug that is the psychoactive drug, the one that gives you the giggles that everybody laughs about, is the Delta-9. Delta-9 is the active form. It's the psychoactive form of cannabis. However, the research that they're doing in Europe and other countries, which have been more proactive in the United States because of the scheduling by the DEA, have found that there's so many other compounds in there. And they work in a synergistic fashion. The best way I could say is it's like the cannabis plant is like taking kale, like taking a kale salad versus taking iceberg lettuce and then trying to replace it with a multivitamin. Which one do you think is probably better? It's probably better to get all your nutrients from the most bioidentical, the most non-adulterated fashion, as opposed to putting binders and everything else and making a multivitamin pill that, you know, is not even as healthy for you. And so like and how it works in the body is it's a little bit a dark box, because there's not been a whole lot of studies, because the country that leads in studies is the United States for pharmacology research.
Right. And if you can't do it anywhere.
and it's currently in the state of being deregulated. Health and Human Services has inquired now. They've sent an inquiry to the DEA. Why have you not descheduled it? Health and Human Services has wanted to change it from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3. Schedule 3 would then be covered by insurance. It would allow banking, interstate commerce
and more research.
And so, but the way what we've sort of found, and when you talk about alcohol, alcohol basically works in your system by you drink more than your liver can process, and that's what gives you
buzz.
That buzz. That's like huffing paint. I mean, like you're trying to create like an ignoc with huffing paint. You're trying to like deprive your body of oxygen and into your brain, and that gives you this like feeling of blacking out.
What were these parties like at UT, man?
I mean,
huffing paint? Jeez. Okay, continue.
Huffing paint. You know, I build houses too, and like occasionally on some of the parts of town, people will take the AC refrigerant.
Oh no.
Yeah. Yeah. In addition to the copper.
So copper. It's not exactly known how these chemicals necessarily interact in the brain, but...
But we do know that we have more endocannabinoid receptors in our body than you have anything else. You have more than the acetylcholine receptors that you have that regulate transmission of your musculature. And so there has to be a reason why we were a largely... A foraging, ancestrally speaking, we are foraging people, and the plants have endocannabinoids. We have the largest number of endocannabinoid receptors, and so if you work at it that way,
anthropologically, you think that we're married and meant for each other.
Yes, correct.
Well, we're going to be right back to talk about this more. Hello, and welcome back to the Armour Men's Health Show. I'm Dr. Mystery, your host, board-certified urologist, joined by my co-host, Donnelly.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. Super fascinating topic. Love this.
Yeah, we're not going to do our normal long intro because we need more time.
We need more time with our Dr. DuPonts.
I'm joined once again by Dr. Cedric DuPont, long-term friend of mine. You and I have been friends for, nearly 25 years now. What you do today is so fascinating. Thank you so much for joining us again, Cedric.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome.
So you are the medical director of
Green Dreams Health.
And this is
appropriate.
A medical cannabis company. And in our last segment, we talked a little bit about kind of the research that goes into medical cannabis, the barriers to research, as well as, potential mechanisms of actions in our body, and then how our bodies seem to be really well suited for the use of cannabis for a number of different conditions. I also talked about how in the medical profession, even me have just resistance to the idea of using this chemical compound, when in fact we use chemical compounds of unknown, how they work. We don't know how they work all the time. Even Tylenol and aspirin we use for many years without exactly knowing how they work. So let's talk a little bit more about what conditions seem to benefit the most from medical cannabis use, and how people in Texas can access it. So what are some of the most common conditions that you're going to see?
The most common conditions are spasticity, post-traumatic stress syndrome, and chronic pain, which I would argue is a form of spasticity. Unfortunately, chronic pain is the only diagnosis that is in the top 10 that is not approved for medical cannabis in the state of Texas. However, people with chronic pain usually have spasticity or some other neurodegenerative disease that we'll cover.
What you mentioned are interesting. So mm-hmm. You've mentioned some that are physical manifestation and others. So some you can see and some that you can't
see.
So you can see spasticity. So like after a stroke.
Correct.
Or if you have a spinal cord injury, or what other conditions would have a lot of spasticity? Would it be like Parkinson's and MS?
I would argue yes, those, and also restless leg syndrome.
Okay.
And the drugs that you use for restless leg syndrome, currently the pharmaceutical ones, will suppress your REM and your non-REM sleep. So you have two kinds of sleep. You have, and this is super important because a lot of people use cannabis just as an insomnia aid or a way to turn their mind off. And if REM sleep is the sleep that is like your filing system. And then you have your deep sleep, and your deep sleep is what clears your brain of toxins. You and I both know that as medical doctors that your brain has a lot of metabolites that are built up because you use a lot of bloodstream, you're using a lot of synapses, you're also generating a lot of the byproducts of that energy consumption that goes on in your brain.
Right.
And you need to allow those things to fix themselves. And the best way to do it is to try and stay in homeostasis, which is have your body follow the natural course. Things like Ambien will suppress those. They will make you sleepy and you'll go to sleep, but you won't be fully cleaned and cleansed in the morning.
How is cannabis different?
Cannabis is different because it does not suppress those two. It's very different. Like alcohol will put you to sleep, right?
Right.
Everybody knows that. People drink a lot of alcohol, they get sleepy. But that's because you're giving a toxic metabolite, which is the alcohol dehydrogenase, which is the liver producing that, deconjugating that, what it sees in your body as a threat. And if it can't do it, the alcohol starts to affect your bloodstream, your cerebellum, your brainstem, which is why they do DPS, pulls you over, and they do the fine motor skill testing. But the endocannabinoid system is very different because it is a modulator. You have receptors for those. These receptors were meant to bind each other. The cannabis plant has receptors that are meant for it. You're not poisoning your body. You're not huffing paint. You're not drinking alcohol to fall asleep. And everybody knows alcohol anybody, you know, like I've basically sworn off alcohol because of these smart watches that I have. Like I had a Whoop, I've had an Apple Watch, and when I drink alcohol, my sleep is terrible. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really make the connection because I would stay in bed for 8 or 10 hours. But it's totally different when you have cannabis. Cannabis, it's a modulator of all the other nervous system activities that you have. So
you talked about spasticity as a physical complaint. Are there any other, as we just kind of go through the indications, any other physical type things that people can have that's a
Parkinson's,
clear medical indication?
Parkinson's is a big one. And okay. Parkinson's
with tremors and some spasticity that you can see there.
And what I will say about the Parkinson's, and I know this because from a personal level, I have a family member with it and they're in New York, so they have access to it even recreationally. And I told them exactly what to get. That individual who happens to be married to my mom says, I use 50% less of my Parkinson's drugs, which are, number one, expensive. Number two, they all make you tired. Yeah. Carbidopa, levodopa, they all make you tired. And so he's like, I still need it, but I need 50% less. I'm not napping during the day.
Wow.
And so now you have Parkinson's. Are there any other physically manifested disease states that are indicated?
Yeah, basically any neurodegenerative or neurological condition is approved for use in the state of Texas.
And then when you have psychological conditions, and you talked about post-traumatic syndrome.
One psychological condition.
And what is that?
That is post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Okay. And so post-traumatic stress syndrome seems like it would be very common in our veteran population. Does the VA support the use of medical cannabis?
They do not, because the VA is supported by
the federal government.
Mm. However, all the Texas dispensaries all give discounts for veterans on with regards to the product, because until it's descheduled, which it was supposed to be descheduled sometime this month, and it's just been taking a long time. Like I said before, the Health and Human Service has asked the DEA inquiry as to why they're not changing the schedule. And once it changes to a Schedule 3, then it can be covered by insurance. Then you can go through the whole process. But right now, when it's Schedule 1, people have to pay out of pocket. So most of these dispensaries will give things to people who are, you know, below a certain income level, veterans, teachers.
And so what is medical cannabis? Like if I were to go to a thing, what am I receiving? Am I going to get some joints?
That is very, very, very important. I'm glad you mentioned that. In the state of Texas, combustion or vaporization of the drug is not allowed. And, you know, I'm pro and con on that. I mean, there's certainly some side effects to smoking it versus taking it in the edible form. The edible form, while it takes a little bit longer because you have to allow for first pass metabolism, you have to allow it to work in your liver to be conjugated to the form that the brain uses. Normally, when you smoke it, the act of heating it up is what conjugates it. So it works right away that way. This way it has to go through your liver. So it depends a little bit on
what you ate, your stomach contents, your metabolism.
But when it works, it lasts longer and it gives a different kind of high. And the studies that they're showing now is that the edibles actually work longer and work more consistently with how we're used to pharmaceuticals, like an opiate. And going back to what you were saying about the forms, they have them in everything else. They have them lotions, suppositories, tinctures, edibles. They have them in chocolate bars, drinks. All those things are available in the state of Texas to you. And the last thing is the ratios is you can do THC only. You can do THC CBD, THC CBN, and the new one is THC CBG. And all these, you know, I don't want to go in much further detail today, but like most people use CBD for day and CBN for night. Think of night for nocturnal. Mm-hmm. And they both have different effects. And the benefit to it is if you want to try and like I mentioned the kale salad, if you want the full spectrum of the drug, you want to sometimes people during the daytime who need it and they still need to have employment is the THC and the CBD or CBN are competitive inhibitors. So if you have 5 milligrams of THC and 5 milligrams of CBD, the fact that you're taking the drug together means you're only getting 2.5 milligrams of the psychoactive component. So you're trying to taper the amount of psychoactive component you have. So
reduce
you can
the high.
So you can function during.
And still have the reduction in spasticity.
Correct.
And if you're taking it for a psychological condition like PTSD, are you taking it like right before something that's going to be stressful, or do you take a little bit every day to kind of calm down that whole sympathetic nervous system that leads to it, you know, leads to the anxiety?
It's a little bit of both. It's a little bit of both with that. And I would say that the studies have shown that it works exponentially better in conjunction with psychological therapy. So same thing with ketamine, which is another topic that's new. as well as, you know, the psilocybins, which is the other new discovery. But I think we're questioning all this stuff, but we're showing that, it's still important. Like, you can't just give somebody, a post-traumatic stress veteran, just a bunch of joints and then be like, hey, you're going to be better with this. Like, I would be suspect of anybody who was selling you a miracle drug. Like
that's right. Like, in the absence of good, close psychological counseling,
correct,
or other psychiatric kind of medications.
Correct.
Now, similar, you're not going to treat your Parkinson's with cannabis either. Need to have other treatments.
Correct.
And I think that taking a step back, you know, all of us as physicians first, I think physicians are going to have to lead a change in mindset when it comes to these things because of how important our patients take our advice. And so I think that continuing to educate physicians on options that are available, trying to demystify or dehumanize, you know, the use of medical cannabis in medicine, I think is something that's going to be incumbent upon all of us in the healthcare profession.
Correct. I totally agree.
Well, Cedric, thank you so much for joining us again. We're always going to have you on over and over again to help us spread this message. Donna, how do people get a hold of us?
You can visit our website, armormenshealth.com, and check out our podcast wherever you listen to free podcasts.
The Armor Men's Health Show is brought to you by NAU Urology Specialists. For questions or to schedule an appointment, please call 512-238-0762 or online at armormenshealth.com.